Good afternoon. It's always hard to talk at the end of the day, so I hope we don't knock you off with our talk. I'll be talking about the web-based monitoring tool for core capacities, but this work is not, I'm just a mouthpiece. There are a lot of people who have worked on this, and even though Ramesh and I are going to present, there are other people who have worked on this, and our various member states and regional offices and partners have all contributed to this work. So we'll just briefly talk about the IHRS, the International Health Regulations, the background to that, and the national core capacities that member states and are expected to develop, and the process that we have been working on in terms of developing the monitoring framework and the indicators to monitor the implementation. Ramesh will talk about the actual tools that we have we've been developing and the operationalization of these. So we'll just take a step backwards in talking about the international health regulations, which are a set of rules that govern all the WHO member states, 193 member states or 194 state parties. And this set of rules had to be revised in 2005. They were revised and came into force in 2007 from the 1969 version, based on the changes that have been occurring worldwide in terms of ensuring global health security and the concerns we had that country member states had in terms of national and global threats. And these were around the emergence and re-emergence of various infectious diseases, globalization with the fear of threats that spread so easily from one threat in Africa would be in the States in within 24 hours. There were always serious and unusual events occurring with threats of deliberate use of biological and other agents, which could be deliberate or accidental, with a huge impact in terms of economy, security, and costs. So over the last 20 years, we've seen many things happening. There've been threats which have been of infectious origins, from plague through Ebola to SARS. And there have been other kinds of threats of different nature, of the radiological natures in Chernobyl, and more recently the polonium-210 incident. There are chemical events that occur, and again, recently we think more of the chemical spill in Cote d'Ivoire, for instance, and many other threats that have come over in the last few decades and months, including the pandemic influenza. And the economic impact is actually huge, whether it's from SARS or from foot and mouth disease or from swine flu. It's been in terms of billions of dollars lost. So in the light of all of this, the whole international community came together to develop this framework, which is legally binding on all member states and that have signed up to it. And that includes, as I said before, 194 states parties to WHO. And this is an international commitment to share the responsibility for collective defense against the spread of international spread of disease. And again, these international health regulations were updated in 2005 and came into force in 2007 with the purpose to prevent, protect against, and control and provide public health response to the international spread of disease. And not just in any good old way as it was before, where blanket measures were used, but in a way that is proportionate to the risk, public health risk that occurred and that would avoid unnecessary interference with international travel and trade. So here there's been a paradigm shift, a shift in the way thinking has been done in terms of moving from controlling events that occurred at borders to the source of the outbreaks, from a list of three diseases that used to be cholera, plague, and yellow fever, to all threats, as we saw, that would cover infectious threats, it would cover chemical, radiological, and other threats, from preset measures, blanket measures that they had to response that was commensurate with the risk. And the key element was, another key element was that of developing national core capacities. And all countries signed up to develop certain national capacities that would meet the requirements of the IHRs. Now, what are these core capacities? The IHR, this booklet, which I'm sure many of you have, and it, you can download from the website, WHO website, defines them as capacities are across the local, intermediate, and national level, and that would be at the local level that to detect any event of any nature, report and control these at the intermediate level in a country to confirm, assess, and report, and at the national level to carry out that assessment, notify to WHO, and to carry out a public health response. This has been very difficult for countries to translate into practical and concrete terms. And therefore, WHO, following a series of consultations over the last couple of years, has come up with 8 core capacities that would translate concretely in a country into what is expected as the core to meet the IHR requirements. And this covered the areas of legislation and policy, IHR coordination, surveillance, response, preparedness, risk communications in terms of outbreak communications and social mobilization, human resources that would carry out the interventions, and laboratory capacity. And this would be across all levels of the healthcare system and across all the potential hazards that a country might face, including at points of entry, which are international border crossings for humans and goods. So the underlying principle in developing core capacities is that of which would reflect the scope, the new scope that I've just described of the international health regulations, and would meet the building of sustainable systems, building on existing systems and resources, and working with what countries have, with a strong international context of having a role to play in the detection and control of public health events beyond one's borders, while respecting the national sovereignty of countries, and the notion of having a central focal point called the National IHR Focal Point for communications within a country and with WHO. And again, there is the perspective of having the ability to support countries in carrying out risk assessment, surveillance, and response. And just to give the agenda for building these core capacities, the international health regulations came into force in June 2007. Countries are expected to build their, assess their systems and develop plans by June 2009 and put these capacities in place by 2012 with a possible extension up to 2016. And for this, they're expected to carry out monitoring of the implementation. So just a quick word about the monitoring of the core capacities. It's the process has been through a working group mechanism involving all layers of WHO and various departments within the World Health Organization, and with that of consulting with regional offices and member states and partner institutions. And the last meeting we had was in Lyon this year to develop approximately 45 indicators. And this has been based on certain needs for the World Health Assembly to report to for the Director General to report to the World Health Assembly and on the progress on the implementation of the IHRs and for WHO to support countries in developing these capacities. So basically, at the country level, these indicators are expected to help countries to identify where change is needed, to provide program information, inform strategic and program planning, and to establish a feedback process to drive decision making. And it is within a monitoring, a framework with a concept of groups of attributes that are assigned to a level, and the levels run from 0 to 4, and within and a country would start at an initial level of 0, and based on certain attributes would move systematically from 1, 2, 3, which is the optimal level in terms of capabilities and capacities in that country. And in doing this, we have based the framework on and the indicators and attributes on the relevance of these to the IHR, the geographic coverage in terms of national, intermediate, or community levels, and in terms of the hazards, the actual quality of the function or service that would be rendered, the timeliness of application, the documentation, the leadership and resources available. And based on this, we have worked with our partners to develop a web-based tool that would be used to collect all this data that would be used to monitor the implementation of the IHRs. I'll stop here and Ramesh would continue the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As you know, Stella laid out, this particular presentation from now on is more in the informatics process than showing about a technology use. But it is important to note that the process of arriving data collection is very complicated at the country level. So I just want to take you through a simple process of how we can understand and facilitate data collection. At the end of the day, it's a web-based tool where you click yes or no on a given indicator and the data is collected. But that is not where I want you to kind of focus on, but I want you to focus on the process. So when WHO and CDC begin to discuss about assisting WHO insofar as coming up with a particular tool to collect data, it was immediately recognized that it was beyond just more than a tool. It's just actually a process. The process needs to be understood and managed. So the goal essentially we had was to test to develop an electronic data collection tool, and that will be deployed to 194 member states. And that particular tool need to be properly field tested, and then we need to create an operation manual and then a final technical documentation. Looks very simple, standard way of doing business. But the move forward strategy had to be clearly defined to define the key stakeholders. Here the stakeholders are the state parties. The state parties must accept this, adopt this, go through the process. So it's very important for us to define this and then define the roles of the partners and the participants, identify funding. HMN was an integral part in this process, and they provided seed funding for the development and also some general guidelines. What I wanted to kind of take you here is we had to develop a conceptual matrix. In a way, you know, best informatics practice starts with something that you have to draw and understand the process. This particular drawing that you're seeing here is a conceptual monitoring matrix that contains the core capacities and hazards that Stella was outlining. And the idea here is you develop a set of indicator matrix database, and based on the response in a controlled area, that matrix will develop a measurement data that is automatically given to both WHO headquarters and the regional offices, plus the country themselves. And there will be some kind of a loop feedback. At the end of the day, what we have to remember is this particular exercise need to help countries to reach their objective, which is to improve the capacity for detection and containment of infectious diseases. Data collection is just part of the activity, but the performance improvement is something to be factored in. So that's an important concept here. And how do you exercise that very carefully? And countries are very sensitive to how you actually quote-unquote grade them. And grading is not a part of this process, but just to level, to teach the countries as to where they are and where they need to go. So we had to create a kind of a conceptual layer here, or a theoretical model, if you will, of identifying the core capabilities, which was an iterative process of development that WHO and their partners developed. Then identify the components within that. And this here, for example, is a surveillance and detection core capacities, core capability. And then the component here is timely sharing of influenza surveillance information. Now, when you break down that to the level of indicators that you want to have to measure that particular component, one of them is implementation of standards for lab diagnostics of human and animal samples. That itself is a loaded terminology, if you will. Now, when you break down that particular one into attributes, then you have, this is a simple example of two attributes, which is procedures in place for collection, handling, and testing of hazardous agents, whether this is an yes or no question. You got them or you don't have them. So, you know, this is the point of, quote-unquote, the raw data collection, if you will, for the system. And it is going to generate a whole sequence of logics after that. Now, there are several attributes, as Stella identified, that system will aggregate, collect, and then eventually it gives a performance matrix insofar as a scorecard, if you will, and that would let the country know where they stand. So what we wanted to do is to not reinvent the wheel, but essentially focus on the Global Health Observatory and the use of a suite of interoperable tools that WHO has already embarked on. This particular tool is extremely important. This particular platform, if you will, is important to understand to some extent. It is a service-oriented architecture, and for those of you in the heavy informatics area, you understand this language pretty well. And it is an integrated approach to data collection, analysis, and reporting. And it also leverages connection of connecting existing tools that is already present in the system. What we want to understand is, for example, unlike commercial systems, WHO has an worldwide operation, and countries have a structured way of inputting data to WHO system, and there are regional representations of WHO, and so this entire operation has to work in that framework for authenticating the users and allowing data to access in a controlled manner, and not to expose the collective data in the headquarters to the rest of the world because of political and other sensitivities. So all these have to be counted into designing a system. So the suite of interoperable tools and the Global Health Observatory already provides that kind of a basic framework for us to utilize that mechanism to operate. This is a simple schematic diagram of the Global Health Observatory. It's a federated system of databases, if you will. We have demonstrated here IHR as one feed of the multiple feeds that potentially this Global Health Observatory can receive. I will show you what this means in this diagram. So essentially, once we have the data coming in from the IHR database to this particular data storage and validation module, if you will, here, can then be utilized for presentation purposes in any manner you want. So here's where the countries will access and the countries will input. So the mechanism is already laid out. And I just want to take you through this data collection system elements. We wanted to approach this informatics principle in three broad chunks, if you will. The first one is the International Health Regulations national focal point is going to administer a consultative process to collect data. Remember, the core capacities do not necessarily belong to Ministry of Health all the time in all countries. Some core capacities have a jurisdictional approach, such as, for example, Ministry of Defense. So consultations need to happen in order for you to give an yes or no answer to a given indicator. So it's a very important part. So it's not just clicking an answer, yes or no. So we had to come up with the process of designing. And after the consultation process is going to be administered, then we have to record on the piece of paper about, in a facilitated approach, collect the data. So essentially, we are going to do a paper-based data collection at the outset because there will be a lot of discussion and debate of whether or not an answer is correct. So the discussions for each core capacity may last 2 days. So we have to think through the process of how do we capture the essence of it. And then electronically, the data gets transferred into an electronic database. So here is the concept of the consultative module-based facilitation forum and the database that we are going to eventually create. So we have a paper-based forums here. As you can see, this is a structured paper-based forum, and this is a facilitation process. And those discussions are recorded, and the questions are answered. And the answered questions are then actually put into a database. So remember, when a country discloses their core capacity, it will become an official record in the United Nations. So it is not just entering data and saving it as a record. It is beyond that process. So there is an authentication needs to happen, validation needs to happen, certification needs to happen for this data to be certified as the data that is deposited by a country. So this particular approach is in that way is important. So the in the paper-based structure, I mean, this is, for example, a checklist for core capacity number 3, surveillance. It kind of gives you the color-coded values here insofar as the levels of accomplishment and the series of quote-unquote indicators that you would be answering as a country representative, yes or no, in this category, which will be, put in the form of a facilitation tool. The facilitation tool has basically four structural components: country information, geographically where they're located, core capacity and the component indicators, and the indicators are questions themselves measured as yes or no. And then you have technical notes that needs to be there. So this is actually a draft version of that. So you got the structure 1, 2, 3, and then there's a 4. So detailed structure. The facilitation notes tells you who needs to administer this tool. And in the web-based data entry, that facilitation notes, once it is recorded insofar as the actual value, then goes to the web system. So here's where I'm just going to give you a quick introduction to the web-based database system that's here. As we previously referenced, it utilizes the Global Health Observatory, which is a common framework with a suite of interoperable tools that is already predisposed to us to this project. Then this particular access to and management of data is in line with the general principles of WHO's Global Health Observatory Data Management Guidelines, and it uses the existing credentials of the users within the system. We went through, like any other practice, to do a standard business process analysis to outline. This is not intended for you to examine carefully, but this kind of gives you an idea. And there are three primary architectural components. One is essentially a database driven by SQL, and then you have the REST architecture, data service platform, then you have an IHR form application. So these are the three primary chunks. Then here's the database architecture insofar as the IHR is concerned, how actually data moves within the system, and the control mechanism, and the three areas, the query forms, the administrative part, and then the custom data entry form that will be running through the system. This is another lateral view of essentially how the entire system operates. This is the business process objects and the functional process objects. So I just want to show you some of the simple things of this data entry tool, which is simply a web-based tool with the login name and password, and then you can enter data, analyze, and view the data. In a general structure, we wanted to emulate the paper-based tool to be identified very closely with the web-based tool, just so that the data entry errors are avoided and the best practice of informatics is processed. So what I'm showing you, or what we have done thus far, is not as ingenious, but the process of managing to make sure that the data entry happens properly is the mechanism that I want to emphasize here. So it's a straitjacket, so to speak, data entry onto a web-based tool. But to get to this point, there are a lot of sub-processes. So that's something that we must remember. And the scoring concept that is going to be established properly will essentially take the yes, no, don't know answer with a logical, there's a mathematical, arithmetic formula that is embedded into the system that gives a color coding as to where the country stands. So in other words, if a particular core capacity has n number of attributes, and if you answer one of the three indicators and the other two are no, then you will still not be going from 0 to 1, if you will. So you have to complete all the answers. In other words, all the indicators must be progressive in the state for you to be given as a incremental rank to the next stage. That particular process is a little tricky, but we are working through the process to make sure that the questions make sense into the answers that you're giving, and the cumulative grading is going to be given based on the color value is going to be logical. And that has not been vetted through the process, but it has taken us a lot more time than we anticipated because of the meaning that is associated with the color coding. Data access, essentially, it's a functional role dependent process. And the analysis, this particular logic is what we are trying to now figure out, where there are 8 core capacities and you have 3 to 5 components per capacity, and you have 2 to 3 indicators and then 4 to 8 attributes, and then you have levels of maturation is 4. So in this level of maturation, if a country wants to go from red to the next color, they have to actually pass a lot of tests within it. In other words, that is the consultative process that countries need to agree that their answers are right in order for them to move. Where it becomes very complicated is that jumping from level 1 to level 2 may require, you know, several $1 million, because there are questions that needs to be answered. In order to answer yes to that question, those structures need to exist in place, such as, for example, the laboratory capacity, BSL level 1 to BSL level 2 or level 2 to 3 jumps require investments capacity. So there are a lot of debates that have happened, but we wanted to come up with an algorithm that makes sense mathematically. This is a progressive level of capacity, which is a 4 color-coded system, as a simple scorecard that will essentially give a country as to where they stand on any given core capacity. Easier to visualize, but that's the way that it's been designed. Right now, data visualization is under development. Like many of the previous speakers who have already shown, visualization is an important component of this that is being worked out. These are some dynamic country profiles that's going to be used as part of the Global Health Observatory. This is a typical scorecard that is being perceived as to be given for a country on a list of indicators as to where they stand, if they have completed or not. In operationalizing, we have gotten through the steps of working with multiple partners to test this particular process of both facilitated approach to data collection and then data entry, and then eventually validating to make sure that the authentication is correct and there's no backtracking of data changes that will happen in the system. And that's pretty much all we have. And there were many players in this process and many consultative sessions. Stella is she was principal to all of this, and she led many, and I think most of the sessions. So, and wrote many of the language that you see in the book, IHR document. It is a book. So we thank you very much, and if you have any questions, And there are a lot of technical folks who have contributed to this who are sitting behind, like Knuts and Steve Yugowitz, or many others can comment on this entire process of technical issues.
Ed? Small question. What do you see as the role of regional networks in helping contextualize and create incentives for implementing IHR? What's the role of regional networks in all this?
We see a very big role in the regional networks in using them. The Mekong Basin, for instance, example you showed, that it's one of our surveillance networks that would count on to help us roll out the implementation. The structure of WHO is such that at headquarters level, we deal with the norms, the standards, the tools, and all of that. The actual implementation is based with our regional and sub-regional networks and the countries themselves. So they do have a great role to play in this.
Here. And you set your parameters of different levels of capabilities. Sometimes it's a challenge that you might be able to get certain laboratory tests and so forth done, but only, for example, in the capital city, which may be more than 2 days by walking or whatnot. How do you account for those differences? And do you then say, well, there's an air hub, and then you can get a sample regionally tested within 24 hours?
when we look at the actual attributes, and you saw this, the color scheme and moving from initial state to 1 to 2 to 3, we've actually taken into account the different levels. So if you're in level 1, you probably have got it that at the national level. But by the time you have that kind of capacity at the sub-national level, it would take a longer time for the countries, and that would put you, when you have it, you become level two. So that those are the kinds of considerations we have built into the indicators and how they are attributed across the spectrum in terms of capabilities. So a country would logically move from the national level, which is where you'd find most capacities, and then, but to be able to say you are level two, we should be seeing that capacity at the local levels.
And the beauty of that indicator mechanism gives an opportunity when they are facilitated properly, will indicate, you know, what kind of investments you have to make as a public health entity in order for you to progress, and where those investments ought to be in terms of population distribution within a country. So the questions that you're asking are the questions that facilitators will ask in discussing. So it is not just checkbox of yes or no as much as what does this mean to progress?
Have you considered explicit referral to HMN framework as the methodology, the approach to building the core capacity that you're trying to
Do you mean core capacity as in infrastructure or core capacity as in IHR core capacities?
Well, the HMN framework is one of those that we're using. It's amongst others, and the basic underlying principle of the IHR is to use existing resources and existing capacities to build upon. And the HMN is one of those capacities that we're building on, and we're working with that particular group to look at what has been working, the lessons learned, and there are other groups that we look working with the flu, for instance, also looking at what they're doing, because many of these capacities, if you build on your flu capacities, for instance, you'd probably capture 60% of what you should be doing, and so we're building on all these other systems and structures and disease-specific surveillance and response capacities to achieve the IHRs.
In addition to that, John, I think the one clarification I want to make is. In the health system strengthening approach for countries, there is health information system strengthening, which is a component. Unlike laboratory systems, which are physical structures and improvements, health information systems, we are utilizing the HMN framework as a basis, for example. And in fact, HSI, Health Statistics and Informatics, Kathy is sitting right here in front of us, and HMN has worked together to actually integrate some of those approaches to designing Global Health Observatory as a basis. I think Stephen wants to jump in.
Well, I think there was someone first, though.
I think Stella can contribute substantially to this. The facilitation process that is happening is extremely important. It's the country declaring where they stand. And that declaration is a process of agreement within the individual entities within a country about where they stand on a particular core capacity or an indicator. The validation is that formality of submitting that particular information to the national focal point for IHR, international health regulations in each of these countries, will then enter into the system, certifying that that is where the core capacity for that particular country is.
Yes, we do. We tend to trust our member states. But that said, we have proposed as WHO that we would support the countries in facilitating that process through what we call a facilitated workshop, where we would bring together all the key informants around the table from all the various hazards and from different core capacities, different ministries, and run a workshop with them where they would bring the documentation. And this tool has the capacity to also upload anything that the country might want to upload. And sort of it would be like an you can observe for yourself. But we offer those services to our member states.
Last question.
I can answer parts of them. I think Stella probably can answer. I think the first part about whether the country, how frequently country can enter data only once. And there's a window of 3 months in the first 3 months time period where database is open, and the only person who is authorized in the country is the national focal point for the IHR. So not anybody and everybody can touch the system. That's the first gatekeeper. After the 3 months, the database is locked. And the disclosure will only be made by WHO headquarters to the country, and the country can only see their progress. Now, if a country progresses over the next 3 years by entering data, the scorecards are visible for them as to where they stood last year and where they're going this year. And there's a micro scale developed for each within the grade. So suppose you are talking about, level one. Within the level one, you have made a progress, but it's incremental enough that it's not still level two. But that can be seen as a progress. And so there's a management loop that is built in. And the feedback related to that is a WHO deliberation between WHO regional offices and the country. And I think perhaps you could articulate more on that. How the countries gets feedback from WHO?
Basically, the objective of this tool are twofold. One is to support the countries to monitor themselves in how they're progressing, and therefore we have all of these built in so that they can actually see themselves progressing even within a level from one attribute to another. And the second one is to be able to provide the World Health Assembly with a report on how the country is progressing and how WHO is supporting the countries in that progress. So in terms of that, it's built in, but the tool is such that the country can see itself progressing and work on the gaps, identifying. We work to support them as WHO would like to support them in developing the capacities that they lack or that they themselves identify. So there's that whole carrot around this. In terms of the feedback, it would probably be through the national focal points, and we're still discussing with our regional offices and the countries how this would be done practically, and those outputs you saw we're discussing. They need to be politically sensitive, because the last thing we want to do is to compare countries to other countries and have one country saying, "Hey, my neighbor, you this way and I'm this way," and therefore we don't want that. We want countries to compare themselves to themselves, and we're really watching out for that and working, treading very carefully around that issue.
Roger, you've got the last word.
Is there any framework for comparing the marginal contribution to public health from moving from one stage to the other with various alternative investments? I mean, if the same $1 million to move from BSL-1 to BSL-2 could double the number of women getting prenatal care, isn't that something that maybe ought to be done rather than make it safe for 25 oil workers from some other country to come in and pump out the oil?
There is an interrelationship in the core capacities, the 8 core capacities that you have, there are indicators that are interrelated at the down the stream. I don't think there was a discussion yet on those indicator relationships, which kind of alludes to your question. But that is not designed, this system is not designed to respond to that question other than just logging the data. But yeah. Perhaps it's an analytical function.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And we had several consultations, and it was agreed that at this first stage we should look at the monitoring, and we should start moving then into the outcomes and evaluation component after we've at least rolled this out, and starting to look at how our intervention is affecting health and how it measures against other interventions and all of that. So this is really a first step, and we do plan to move along that that line with time.
Okay, Steve, the last word.
I was just going to add that having been part of some of those consultations and deriving these questions and this process, it was an incredible amount of work. And, you know, they should be applauded for all the work that they've done to come down to those lists of indicators and questions. And because it's there now, because it's been adopted, there's so many more opportunities that exist to sort of address the kind of questions you have, because that basic set of questions is there that one can now work with to perhaps support things further. And the model is also one that can be looked at, you know, for NDGs or other sort of approaches. So
absolutely.
I
think I just wanted to clarify. Chris mentioned to me while we were just, you know, while we were discussing other things, this is a working model. This database is a working model. We just need now a handover program to make sure that the database sits in the WHO headquarters, and it will be tested and hopefully deployed by January for all the 194 member states to consider submitting the data through the system. So in some sense, it took a lot of time and effort to make this happen, but I think, as everybody alluded to, the consultative process to arriving what indicators are was the toughest part of the process, and Stella championed many of these processes, and I was watching her in the last 2 years. It's remarkable how she navigates through the highly politically rich environment and get the process accomplished.